And we welcome back into the studios the musical director of the Charleston Music Hall. We say hello to Charles Carmody. How you doing, bud?
Hello, good to see you.
Yeah, happy new year to you.
Thank you.
At the end of last year. And before we talk about this year, let me just ask you about a couple of things that happened there at the end of the year. You had the Blue Dogs party where Bill Murray and Alison Krauss just showed up, and that's become an annual thing, really, hasn't it?
Absolutely. We've done it eight years now. So those were one of the first, Blue Dogs were one of the first guys I reached out to about doing a show. We came up with doing this anniversary party every, you know, between Christmas and New Year's. And what's really cool is that it's a fundraiser for MUSC Children's Hospital, and they've raised, over those 8 years, I mean, $700,000 for MUSC Children's Hospital.
Yeah, I mean, that's so
great. It's so cool, yeah.
And they're such good guys, and that's really like a sort of a last waltz kind of feel to it and
Absolutely.
Everything. And then you have somebody like Bill Murray just show up. And
yeah, I mean, he actually comes to a lot of shows. He's very supportive of Charleston Arts. It's really cool to see. And he's always super kind to the staff, and he's a great human.
And then you also have sort of an annual homecoming show, if you will, for Jump Little Children as well. You do that? That's an annual thing,
yep,
too.
Yeah, this is about the third or fourth year we've done it with them. And very different shows, but both really wonderful humans putting out some great music, and just a testament to how strong the Charleston music scene is.
It is. I mean, it really is amazing to think about how this is such a vibrant music scene, and the Charleston Music Hall is right in the middle of it. And so I want to ask you some questions about the music hall and your experiences with it, because you graduated from the College of Charleston, what, 2011?
2011.
How did it become, after you were graduated from the College of Knowledge, that you ended up becoming the music director at the Charleston Music Hall? Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, so I graduated 2011 from CUC. I tried to move to Vancouver, British Columbia, headed out west, hit the border, and the Canadians wouldn't let me in. I had a guitar and a backpack and a bike, and they said, "We think you're trying to work and to move illegally." Which I wasn't. I was going to try and hang out with the lady for a bit and just kind of bounce around after school, and that didn't work. So instead I moved to Seattle, and that didn't go so well. So came back to Charleston 2012 and started looking for work, got introduced to Michael Bennett, the owner of the Charleston Music Hall. Didn't know he owned the Charleston Music Hall at the time. I was just out doing interviews, trying to find work. I knew he owned hotels and restaurants. And I got a meeting with him. And in that meeting, he mentioned the Charleston Music Hall and how, you know, they've had it since the 90s. It's never really made it. They're not so sure what to do with it. And no one was running it at the time. So it was like a nuclear bomb went off in my head, and I immediately knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. I'd been a musician for a long time. I'd put on shows in college, and I'd always been pretty connected with the music scene myself. And it just was like all the light bulbs came on. I went home. I typed up an 8-page business proposal. I actually mailed it to him, and from there was just working part-time jobs. And I didn't, you know, I was like, maybe this will be something, maybe it won't. Got a call 2 weeks later asking me to come in and chat with them and go over the proposal. And so I did. And, he hired me on the spot. He said, "You know, I don't know where the keys are, but find the keys and you can get in."
I was going to say, all of a sudden, it's something that you dreamed of and you put together this proposal to do. You're like, "Okay, here are the keys. Talk to you later."
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, "Okay, now I have to create this idea that I had." I mean, how is it that you, when you began, you got to where you are now in the way that the Charleston Music Hall has become the go-to venue in the Lowcountry?
I mean, a labor of love. I mean, I've been there, you know, especially at the beginning, was there every day, 12 hours a day, just figuring it out. And, you know, there was a lot of work to do from cleaning to, I mean, there was 20 years of trash in the building to, I convinced my friends to come paint with beer and, you know, got the stage redone and started, you know, just started knocking on doors, went to Mark Bryan, went to Music Farm guys, Ear for Music, and just started hitting down the doors of, "Hey, we need to, you know, this space is amazing."
I was gonna say, you can create an amazing space, but then to book the bands, to get the artists to come in, and I mean, now that's become a pipeline where everybody's wondering who's playing the music hall this weekend, what's going on there now, because you have so much going on. But at the beginning, you're trying to expose this venue to artists across the country.
Absolutely. And it was difficult in that the model of the hall was always a rental facility, so it wasn't producing its own events. And so I was charged at the beginning with finding promoters to rent the space, risk money on the show, and these promoters would put money in, and the music hall would get a flat rent, which I quickly realized that was not a viable business model because, number one, there weren't enough promoters, and number two, it put all the risk on the promoter, and it would be a difficult thing to regularly put stuff in that way. So I had to come up with a creative way to alleviate the risk on the building because, I mean, again, we were starting in the deep negatives.
Right.
And also convince promoters to bring us acts. So that's where I started going. I mean, I remember I took a week and I drove to Nashville and I met with AC Entertainment, AEG, NS2, and 25 different agencies. All with my little one sheet, pitch sheet, you know, hello, I'm here to see blah, blah, blah.
Is this an example of not knowing enough to just say, I'm going to plow forward and this is how we're going to do it without knowing what the realities are as you move forward, maybe?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I just thought this is what I got to do. I'm going to Nashville and these people are going to listen to me and I know this is going to work. And sure enough, out of that trip, our partnership with National Shows 2 started, which really did change the music hall.
Okay, what was the tipping point? What was the moment that you're like, you know what, I think this is going to work? I know that when the Blue Dogs were in here, we were talking about the venue itself, and they were saying they remember when it was the recording live at the Charleston Music Hall, and it was Ricky Skaggs and that whole show, that kind of seemed to be a point. As the musical director of the musical, what was the moment when you're like, okay, I think this is going to work?
2014. It was 2014 when we finally, I mean, NS2, we were supposed to do 20 shows with them the first year. We ended up doing 40 with them. And then on top of that, because revenue is being generated, I was able to start creating my own alternative and local and regional programming. And so I was getting a handle on that. So, you know, we did like Soul Driven Train's album release show, which was amazing. We would do at least Testone's Valentine's Day. You know, we did Charleston Jazz Orchestra has been in there for before my time, so that was a great staple. Moran's Entertainment's been there before my time. That was a good staple. So, and then there was just someone in the, you know, office answering phones. So, I mean, I started getting rentals as well. And then finally, 2014, between rentals, in-house promotions, and then these co-promotions with NS2, that's the year we saw it. We made it into the black, and I started seeing it working.
Hey, now, a couple of things. First of all, when you have 365 days in the year, how many events are going on at the music hall?
2019, we did 278.
So 278 out of 365. And it's not just concerts. I mean, we've talked about this. You've got film festivals. You've got comedy shows. You have all kinds of things that happen in there.
We've got lectures, the Pecha Kuchas. I mean, you know, and that's what I really love and where I shine is in the programming and creating creative programming that people would be interested in.
So I guess it goes without saying, but I'll ask you anyway, you got to love your job, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing else I can see. Yeah, it's the best.
Well, I mean, and the Charleston Music Hall has now become that pivotal venue when it comes to music, be it local music or be it national artists coming through. At the same time, you know, and we can go back over the last, say, 20 or 30 years here in the Lowcountry, it seemed like this is a market that's growing.
Yep.
And a lot of people want to come here. Bands want to come here. They want to come here and spend a day or two because they've heard about Charleston. They love Charleston. But there's also competition. And, you know, yep. I know that whether it be the North Charleston Performing Arts Center or the refurbished Gilliard, which, of course, now starts booking shows. There was always the discussion, would TD Arena start booking any shows there? And they look like they're really not going to be doing that.
No.
But, you know, you had the Music Farm, which was a vibrant place, which kind of fell off a little bit. And the music hall kind of stepped in. You've got the Poorhouse, which is always doing all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
Is there enough room for all of those venues that we named? Because you guys right now are leading the pack.
There is absolutely enough room. I mean, yes, I think this market's growing. I don't think there's enough, honestly. I really don't. We don't have enough rooms. We don't have enough small rooms. I mean, right now, you have the Poorhouse and Royal American. That's it for regularly programmed smaller rooms that are under 500 capacity. Therefore, we are not able to to start artists off in this market. Royal American stage is 8 feet by 12 feet. Love them so much, but, you know, a band like Waxahachie or, you know, these indie rock bands that I want to bring in, you know, they can't fit on that stage. And then the Poorhouse is wonderful, but Alex has that so booked that, you know, it's hard to get dates. So you know, it is interesting. I do think we need more rooms and more promoters in town and more music. I think there's room to go around.
Now, let's talk about the venue itself, because you mentioned the fact that this was a building that had been there for a little while and had been, I remember back in the 90s when it was really just principally the home of Serenade,
yep.
which was the Brad and Jennifer yep. Moran's and the show that it yep. felt a little bit like Myrtle Beach.
Well, it was Charleston. Myrtle Beach. Yeah. It was Calvin Gilmore came down and had the owner build the building for his show, which was a basically knockoff of his Myrtle Beach show.
So how then, you know, the venue, it seemed like there was a time when it was in danger of going dark and being vacant and being taken over by something else. You know, I mean, there seemed like there was a time where it could stay or it could go.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd say 15 years of that. I mean, because Serenade left in the late 90s. And then from then, you know, you never really got consistent programming in the room until really 2014.
Yeah, until you guys came in.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a million factors. I think Serenade was ahead of its time. I think that the Music Farm was doing so well back then. There, you know, a seated venue, you know, it just, there were a lot of factors. It just wasn't working. But with the rise of Americana and folk music and with the rise of the, you know, popularity of Charleston, you know, I think we're just, it's a good time. It's a good time for music in this city.
Well, there's not a bad seat in the house, and it's so much fun to see any act, whatever it may be, at the Charleston Music Hall, because it's a great venue and conveniently located. And I have to say that almost every time I go to a show at the Music Hall, I incorporate dinner somewhere around the Music Hall into that
night.
And
that's been the coolest thing. And that's what I really love, is the impact it has on the city and the community. Is it's a great thing. And it does bring people into that area, and they do go out to eat, and they do, you know, go to the record shop down the street, and they do, you know, engage in the city. And I think that's why entertainment venues are so important.
Well, what is it now then, as you sit here in 2020 and you think about the beginnings and now you're looking for the future, what is it that the future holds when it comes to Charles Carmody and or the Charleston Music Hall? I mean, what is it that you want to do next?
Yeah. So we are making our seating removable downstairs in March. So all of the seats, there's 284 seats in front of the soundboard, which is we call the orchestra. That is all going to become removable seating and will be able to go into standing room.
So now, would that be on a case-by-case or show-by-show
basis?
Correct. Determined by you and or the artist?
Determined by us and the offers we put in for the artist. So, you know, we can do everything we're doing now, but then we can attract artists who don't want seats. I mean, that's the biggest hurdle we hit right now, is that a lot of artists don't come to the room because there are seats.
So, and that would obviously be known ahead of the time that the ticket went on sale if you're buying a show for reserve seating,
yep.
or would you have a combination, I guess, reserve seating in the balcony and then orchestra, where it'd be maybe a GA pit
There's a number of different ways. Number one, all reserve seating, 965 seats. Another way would be all GA. It's 1,200 would be the cap at all GA, and you can go up or down. Another way would be reserved upstairs, GA downstairs. That'd be 900 downstairs, 330 upstairs. Well, it's 870 downstairs, 330 upstairs.
I know that's something that gives you the flexibility, not only on the acts, but also the not only the who you might draw as an act, but also the way the audience can enjoy
Absolutely.
The acts.
Absolutely. And that's the biggest struggle we're having now. I mean, last night, a woman came up screaming at the box office because people were standing. And our rule right now is majority rules. If people are standing, we're standing. If they're sitting, we're sitting. And she could not. She could not fathom how we allowed people to stand, you know, at a concert.
This
and
has
we're
been
going,
a debate,
oh,
though.
Oh my goodness!
This is a debate that's been going on for decades. Did you when you purchased the ticket? Did you purchase the seat or did you purchase the space? Because, you know, if you're standing up and you're having a good time, it's a concert. It's music. You want to stand
concert,
if you want to move, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, I mean, Art Garfunkel reading poetry and whispering Sounds of Silence. Sure, we will have all seats. You know, something like even last night, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, big band, so much energy. I mean, the band feeds off the energy of the room. They really do. And so once you have people, that energy of those people in front of the stage standing and moving and interacting, it's a whole different experience. And I like to think that we'll still be able to, for those people who do like to sit, that's fine. We have 330 seats in the balcony, and we're keeping the seats in the very back of the theater. So you can go to either of those spots, and I think it will make a great experience for everyone.
How problematic is it for you to create that situation where the removable seats, I mean, how much turnaround does it take like that? And is there special kinds of things that you have to do to make that happen?
I mean, so basically we have to, there's a seating system that we're going to replace those. There'll be new seats that are actually, I think, more comfortable than our current seats. And so basically they just go on a rack. And so if you want to make it a GA show, you have a couple stage hands come in. It takes 15 minutes to do 75 chairs. So it should take about an hour and a half to switch the room over. All the chairs go on racks and they go to the back of the room where they're stored.
Do you have a show in mind right now that will be the first show where those seats are removed?
So we have many.
You have a bunch in mind, I'm
that
sure. Yeah.
We have not confirmed or announced yet because, you know, we're March 22 through 27 is the set dates for moving the seats, but okay. We want to just make sure that we're 100% because it's a lot of moving parts.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's just say between now and then, you've got a lot of shows happening. And as we talk about the month of January and February, I know we're giving away tickets to see Todd Snyder on January the 31st, the troubadour of our time or
indeed.
Whatever.
Yep.
I know that you have the Fab Four tribute show coming in February. I actually took my son to see this once before when he was little, but he loved the Beatles and had a great time. Really enjoyed that show. The two shows of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, we were giving away tickets to that. Those guys are having a great time at the music hall.
Absolutely. And they're wonderful. I mean, we've become buds with them. I mean, I took their tour manager out for drinks after the show last night. They love the city. And it's really cool to see bands like that who want to do two nights with us because they want to be in the city. They want to be hanging out. And, they could easily go off to Atlanta or wherever and make more money. But I think they love the room, they love the staff, and it's something special we've built.
Well, I mean, and that speaks volumes to what you guys, you said, have built.
And that's the other thing I've been very, very fortunate about is the staff of the music hall is par none some of the best humans on the planet. And they put their heart and soul into that job.
Well, they better because they're going to be there a bunch of nights. I mean, I know you have a staff that rotates around to those events, but still, that's a lot of events going on in 365 days.
It truly is, and there's definitely been times of tears and beers trying to get through those seven show weeks. But I can't say enough about Nicholas McDonald's, our operations director. I mean, he makes the artists feel like they're in their living room. I mean, the artist walks away feeling so taken care of, so loved and supported, and the production's tight and right on. And, he does a phenomenal job to Bonnie Wolf, who's done everything from bar to box office. She's now the marketing manager, to a great box office staff. I mean, for a show, we'll employ up to, 45 people. It's unbelievable.
And it's a constant thing every day. I mean, you're always feeding the beast. I mean, constantly every day, every week, you're looking ahead, doing shows and making sure you've got the right staffing and everything is good to go.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what are some of the shows that you're excited about coming up here in the rest of January and into February? Because I love the fact that you guys, one day you'll have, say, Tesla on February 17th.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you'll have the Indigo Girls. Then you'll have a film series. And then, you got a little bit of everything. And so it's a different crowd, too, coming to the same place.
And that's the goal, right, is you want to schedule so that you can hit different demos on different nights of the week so that you're not hitting the same group over and over again. A great, something we kind of messed up was we were doing Napoleon Dynamite with the actor from Napoleon.
Right, John Hader was actually there doing a speaking about the movie.
But then 3 days before that, we're doing Jay and Silent Bob with Kevin Smith. So we're seeing both shows sell slowly.
Right.
Because I think we're literally hitting the same person. So that's part of the fun, puzzle I get to put together, which is creating programming that doesn't negate itself and that does create a fun and interesting lineup. I like to pride ourselves in that we're still involved with local musicians and the local concerts. I'm really excited about Saturday night, Women and Willie, part of our Women and series led by Lindsay Holler and Hazel Ketchum. I mean, just a really, we've done 17 Women and shows.
Wow.
And all of them have been successful. We're selling over 500 tickets for all these. And it's so much fun. It's so much fun to see how the ladies take the male, like physical male, sounding voice and change them and change the songs up. And we always have a great backing band. So Women Willie is Saturday. I'm really, really excited about Camp CAAMP is coming up. That's already sold out.
That thing's sold out. We've been playing Peach Fuzz here.
So this is a cool, and that, they're a cool example of, I booked them at the Royal American February of last year, sold that out at 300 tickets, and now they're coming back doing the music hall, sold out. I mean, that's what we need to be doing as venues is, and that is what we are starting to do. When I started, you know, the venues were not working together. They were not talking to each other. They were, you know, competing against each other. And we're not competing against each other in the city. We're competing against other cities. That's what the venues have to realize and understand.
That's interesting because people would think that, hey, you're in competition with other venues here in town. But really what you're doing is you're competing against other cities.
That's correct.
To pull the artists to town.
That's correct. And, you know, I always say there's the right room for the artist. I mean, the artist should be playing in the right room, period. Turquoise should be at the performing or at the poorhouse, period. You know, and then there are those that kind of cross over for sure. But I'm, you know, that's just an example of, you know, each room has a different feel. And I think each room can survive and thrive.
Are you seeing Charleston attract more attention because of its international status as like the number one city in the world? Like, or are people just looking for a cool venue to play or is it a combination?
That's not, you know, it comes down to money. The agents, burst the bubbles, but you know, if people weren't regularly reaching out to booking agents back in the past, and now you have Live Nation at the Music Farm, Alex Harris, the Gilliard, Performing Arts Center, us all hitting agents up. And so the booking agents are starting to learn the city and learn that it's a viable market where their artists can make money. We are a secondary market at best.
Right, because you see artists that will go to the Charlotte, Raleigh, Greenville, Atlanta kind of thing.
They'll do the big
right.
markets yep. first, yep. but then they need to do something else those other days. So they will. And I think that's a national trend we're seeing, which is agents and artists seeing that, oh my gosh, there is money in secondary markets, and we need to build our secondary markets because we can't keep playing New York every weekend. We have to, you know, we have to branch out.
Now, do you enjoy doing some of the events like the symposiums and the film festivals? And you should, you know, during December, you showed Christmas movies, and you'll have some film festivals built around particular Bill Murray Film Festival that we did not that long ago. And do you enjoy doing that as a counter programming to just your basic rock show or music show?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the fact, you know, we started doing film primarily because there was no movie theater downtown, which kind of blew our minds.
That's amazing.
What city in America doesn't have a movie theater in the heart of its urban metropolis? But so we started doing movies to kind of serve that group of humans who wanted to see film on the big screen, appreciated film. And they've done pretty well. I mean, you know, we see about 100 people for a movie, that's a success because, you know, expenses are pretty low and we're able to make it work. And, you know, I think that's a good service for the community to be able to see these films on the big screen you might not be able to see.
So now I'm going to put you on the spot, and that is, what is it that you're really, your wish? What is that thing down the road? Like, I'd really like to get this person to come to the venue. I'd really like to have this person do a residency there or an artist or whatever. What's the big get? What's the thing? I mean, I know I'm asking you almost to drop a rumor in a way, but I want to know what it is that keeps you up at night. As far as trying to say, you know, this is who I want to get here. This is the one I'm really looking for. I'm really pushing for. But the one that I want them to finally say yes after getting 20 no's or something like that. Is there one or two out there that?
I mean, you know, my staff would immediately know the answer to this, which is Sufjan Stevens is my all-time favorite.
Okay.
We didn't get him when he played the Performing Arts Center, primarily because our rigging couldn't handle his LED wall. But we have since redone our rigging, so it could technically handle his show now. And he only did about 900 tickets out there. So it would have been the perfect show at the hall.
Uh-huh. The wheels are spinning as
and
we talk.
And he's my all-time favorite.
You got another one out there or something that you've been thinking
wonderful.
About that you've been throwing out or throwing around there? Like, you keep getting no's from, or you keep saying, we're going to get them here. We're going to get them here. We're going to keep trying. You know what I mean?
I mean
or people that people request on a regular basis.
Yeah, people are so funny. Neil Young for a week is you know what we get so much and just going.
Neil Young do a residency
for a week.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sounds great. Yes. You know, unfortunately, that's not how it works. but yeah, I mean, there's Big Thief is a band I've been really into recently, and you know, we've been starting to talk more seriously with them. But I think on the whole, it's just the fact that agents are now responding to us, which is
but
nice.
That takes time.
I mean, for years, we either get no response or, not playing the market, not playing the area, one-liners. But now we've built some really cool relationships with these agencies, and they're starting to pay attention.
Is the difference is now that they're coming to you rather than you pursuing them? Or
the difference is it's now a conversation.
Okay.
You know, it is a constant conversation of us saying, hey, King Princess seems like she's doing really well. It's pretty cool. What are your plans? And they say, oh, we're going to do secondary markets now and then come back, So that conversation's happening. And I think that because we're starting it and then also joining in on it, there is a constant conversation about what's happening. I think some other stuff that's pretty cool, High Water Festival is changing a lot of the ways agents see the market because an artist is able to play High Water and then can come back around the same year and play a club. Deer Tick is a great example. Deer Tick was for years has played the Poorhouse and has only been able to do 350, 400 tickets. They play High Water, they come back 5 months later, and they sell out the music hall. I mean, that's unbelievable. So I think seeing stuff like High Water and Humphreys McGee stuff that they're doing, Trondosa, I mean, that's just bringing new artists into the market and elevating them to a good level to which they can come back and do a club play, which I love a festival as much as anyone else, but I don't think a festival play can replace a club play. There's just something special about going to see an artist show.
An intimate environment like that cannot be beat.
I think a lot of the younger kids, those youngins these days, I mean, they like that they can pay $100 and see 30 artists, but I don't think it replaces. You didn't even ask me about that, but that, I think festivals is a big topic in the industry right now.
In a positive or a negative, because I can remember I went to the first Bonnaroo in 2002. And since then, you've seen the festival world blow up. And to some would say to the detriment of the concert scene. Some would say that it gives people the ability, as you said, on one price to see a whole bunch of different artists in the same place. But there are pros and cons.
I love going to festivals, but I was definitely more negative on the fact that, from late May to early September, we can't get acts because they're at festivals and we can't offer the money that festivals offer these artists. I mean, festivals are offering 5, 10, 15 times an artist's normal guarantee. And so, we just can't compete with it.
Is that the quiet season, if there is one for you guys?
July and August is pretty brutal for us. It's nice in the sense of like, okay, we can kind of catch our breath and get together and get ready for the fall. But our slowest 2 months are July and August.
So now for everybody who's listened to this conversation, what is the way that you recommend that they keep in touch with what the Charleston Music Hall is doing on a regular basis? I mean, we can sign up for all kinds of things to get updates. So to stay in touch with the number one venue in the Lowcountry right now for live music, the Charleston Music Hall, how can people do that?
Yeah, the easiest, I'd say, to sign up for our newsletter, which you can do on our homepage. We send out weekly emails with announces. What's cool, if you're on the newsletter, you get the presale password, so you can get the tickets before other people, especially bots
Is that still a tough one there? Is that still a tough battle for you guys when it comes to tickets when you sell them? Because some of the artists you bring in have
the biggest issue that no one's talking about.
The bots out there and
well, and scalpers. I mean, bots have. We're starting to see better software in the ticketing, especially switched to Ticketmaster. I know, hiss. But I do believe that at least Ticketmaster does have some better walls in place to keep out the bots. We don't currently allow reselling through our Ticketmaster because we don't want people scalping through our site.
Right.
But we do have 8 websites currently reselling our tickets. And every night, someone thinks they were on our website and they went to ticketnetwork.com or box office or Vivid Seats or StubHub and they overpaid for tickets and they come to us because the tickets don't work or whatever the reason is. And it kills me.
What's the solution that you can see to deal with that? I mean, that's off the top of your head. Is there one?
Google,
technology moving faster than our ability to cope with
it. It is fraud. Even though these websites in tiny little print say secondary reseller, our biggest issue is people thinking they're on our website, but they're not. because they make these sites that, you know, it has our schedule, it has a calendar, or it has a shot of the building, it's got a seating chart. And until the government makes the reselling of tickets illegal, there's not much we can do. We have to get there. In the state of South Carolina, if you sell a ticket for over a dollar at face value, it's illegal. But these people are not operating in the state of South Carolina. They're in Denver, and they're in Texas, and they're in Seattle. And we can, you know, we hunt and find them all the time, and we blacklist them from the system, we get them out, but you could spend 50 hours a week just battling these scalpers.
Wow.
And so for us, you know, the Best Friend program, which is where you can sign up and you can call and get tickets early, the pre-sale passwords, the fact that we have regular box office hours. I mean, we really encourage people, call us, come down and talk to us. You don't pay fees, you guarantee tickets, and we don't want our tickets getting into the hands of scalpers. We want locals to get it. So my other thing is, buy your tickets early. Stop waiting until the last bloody minute. Just make a plan, people. Make a plan. I know it's difficult, but I mean, don't call us day of complaining that there aren't any tickets.
Well, I was going to say that, first of all, with a venue the size of the music hall, you can't wait till the end because you might not get a seat. But second of all, and you know, because you've been around for a long time, Charleston has notoriously been a big walk-up town, and those days have to end. To get a seat at a venue to see a good show at the music hall, but B, to deal with the scalping.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and it is, you know, and we are doing as much as we possibly can. Google, we've push for them to pull down these sites. We're in conversations there. We've contacted state's legislator. We've put in stuff, you know, kind of making our case to try and get stuff passed. So, but it's got to be, people need to start yelling louder in order for that stuff to actually happen.
Well, it's a good thing to have a giant radio station antenna to the tens of thousands of people to hear exactly what you're talking about, because I know a lot of people who feel exactly the same way that you do, and you got to get the word out and got to let people know how to change their buying patterns to try to offset this, and then to let their voices be heard to get government action to deal with
correct.
This.
That's correct. I mean, you know, I think... Yeah, it's a racket. But again, we're here to talk to you in person on the phone or at the box office. So I just, you know, we're doing all we can and putting as much effort in as possible to connect with patrons and make sure they have the best experience possible.
Well, kudos to you and your amazing staff at the Charleston Music Hall. I mean, it's been an amazing story to watch. And now we're just going to enjoy. I know you guys are going to be working hard to make it so that we can enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say expect 40 additional GA shows in the next year with the GA capacity, along with the 70 national shows we did in the seating capacity, along with the 100 other rentals and films and dance stuff we're doing. So it's only going to get better. And I think you're going to see a higher caliber artist coming through. And it's getting better all the time.
I know. He says this with Permagrin. He's talking with Permagrin right now. Charles Carmody, the music director for the Charleston Music Hall. The future looks bright, and folks, we're happy to visit with him. And hey, kudos to everything, and continued best of luck. And,
absolutely.
And we'll continue these conversations.
Yeah, and again, we can't say enough thank you to The Bridge for everything y'all do. I mean, you stay connected to the people, you stay local, and we're so appreciative of the hard work you guys do. So thank you as well.